You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for your Boston Celtics. And we have a game, John. We have a game. We get to talk about a game, but then we have to take this huge break before we get another game. So here we are sitting smack dab in the middle, in between the two games. And we've talked a little bit behind the scenes on Twitter. You know, I'm changing a tune. That I sang even just a week ago, I'm pretty sure. I didn't realize that Jason Tatum, like they said he was stronger, and we saw those pictures. Seeing him up against Wendell Carter, seeing him in the inside, fighting through contact willingly. This is not, you can just tell, it's not like, hey, it's preseason, I'm going to try it out. Based on his size, based on his aggressiveness, based on the criticism and his desire to improve, I'm ready for him to be the four, John. I am. I don't need him to be the three anymore. I still want Jalen at the two. Don't get me wrong. I still want Jalen at the two, and I want to stay a little bit bigger.
Marcus at point guard.
But yeah, I don't want him at the three anymore. No, like he's got. He's filled out. Dude is jacked.
He is jacked.
He is straight. Like, I don't know how much pounds he put on, but that is not the same body type. Maybe even since the Olympics, honestly, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even in just that period of time, he's not lost to anything.
No,
you know, like he hasn't lost a step. I was really kind of watching for that once I like, even before the dunks, you know, empowering in, even as the game was just getting underway, I was kind of just watching him move and I was like, God, he's big. Like you can see it everywhere. Like it's not just shoulders. Like all they wanted to talk about was the shoulders, but it's everywhere. The dude had to have added 20 pounds. I mean, is that 15? I mean, seriously, he's big.
He's big. I mean, I don't think it's big. I mean, I think the shoulders is where you see it the most, you know, where it looks like he has basketballs attached to both shoulders. You know what I mean? That image of him lifting weights with the barbell in between his hands right here, and you see his shoulders, and they're just like,
oh yeah.
Like, holy Moses, this guy
it's in his legs too, dude. It's in his thighs. Yeah. Like when you, like his ability to box
out. He doesn't skip leg day is what you're saying.
He's what? He does not skip leg day. You know, he definitely is doing the squats, you know, even if it is with the dumbbells. But his ability to get on the block.
Yeah.
you know, and like, if he wants to develop a back to the basket game, he's got the lower body strength. He's not a string bean in the legs with that jacked upper body. He doesn't skip leg day, however you want to put it. Like, he's got the balanced weight to, you know, really, I think, push people around a little bit and carve out extra space, you know, down low. So, but he, you know, as we saw, it's not like he's losing any quickness to try to turn the corner, spin and attack the rim.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting. Jared Weiss, his article for The Athletic really talked about, you know, how they're trying to move Tatum's kind of spot. You know, he'd always had, he had been on the perimeter, right? They always put him on the 3-point arc and work from there. And now they're trying to really put him, you know, more on the elbows and a little bit closer to the paint. Kind of in a Kawhi-esque, mold, which is interesting because of course Tatum is a much better 3-point shooter. I mean, just really devastating from 3-point land, but the ability for him to kind of one dribble drive his way to, the basket and get free throws. I mean, again, you know, this is, that's Paul Pierce's territory. That was where he worked, out of the elbows. And obviously that was something that, that worked really well for Paul and gave the free throw line. The other thing is that, you know, we've seen Tatum over the years. His dribble drive, it gets sometimes a little bit loose and kind of lose the ball. And that's because his hands are a little bit smaller than say Kawhi's or whatever it may be. So having him work a little bit closer to the basket, certainly lessens the chance of having those turnovers kind of crop up as well. So it's interesting. It's going to be really wild to see him working out of that spot, but it also allows him to use his playmaking to a greater degree too. That's something that the biggest frustration for the Celtics offense that I've had over the last several years is that it's so perimeter based.
Yeah.
And their inability to kind of drive or create, you know, rolling lanes to the basket with their bigs.
Or there's no way to work the ball around. In and out.
We're like already they on never the elbow.
Go in and out. Right. It's just around right. and around and around.
And he
around.
can find cutters. He can dish to the corner now. I mean, it just, it opens some doors. And what's been great is we've already seen some of the guys have said, I think it was Josh Richardson said, I didn't realize that Jason Tatum could pass like that. That was probably the best thing I've heard throughout all the, you know, since training camp opened was to hear that, because if that's getting unlocked, okay, now we're talking about a different type of player than what we've been used to in Boston.
Yeah. And it's not like he's not going to shoot 3-pointers. He's, right. you know, it's just the ball's going to move so that he can leak back out beyond the arc and find a defender who's not able to get position. I mean, if you're going to defend Jason Tatum, you kind of want him just dribbling out there and moving into that step back. I mean, you don't really want it because he's exceptionally good at hitting that, but at least, you know, you're not going to get, you know, kind of beat, right? You can defend that in a predictable manner. Sometimes you can swing a double, and the Celtics have not shown an ability to make anybody pay for scheming against it. Right. Doesn't mean they're always effective because he's incredibly talented, but they you know, it's the easiest thing for them to scheme because there's really no counterpunch. And so this changes that game. Now, even as we're talking about, you know, the physique changes, you know, we're going to go to Brown, but Grant Williams is going to get the real award. As big and strong, you know, as Tatum got, you know, Grant Williams deserves a lot for hiring the chef, getting the work done. But Brown is also, you know, I don't know if he's really quicker. Like everybody's like, oh, he's quicker. I don't know if he is quicker or not, but for a guy that was already strong and quite springy, I mean, the dude can jump. Taking a few pounds off, I'm expecting many more alley-oops. And I love seeing, it was Tatum that fed him that one, right? Didn't he feed Brown for an oop? In that first game, like that was really nice to see. And I feel like during stretches, they still got work to do. I mean, they do, but that is the first game and it was fun to watch, but they still have some work to do, and it's around making consistency around keeping the ball moving. They're still finding that dead spot where they're not doing it as well. But when they were doing it well, the decision making was super fast, right? Things like that alley-oop. And that was great to see. And they have so many different looks. The rotations, how smooth were the rotations? You know, and they went deep, right? He was able to bring in Langford and, you know, Neesmith at the end. And that was a ton of fun. And, you know, to watch them climb back into it at the end against Orlando, that was a lot of fun. But, it was just like some of the smoothest, right? You didn't really notice when they subbed people, like nothing really kind of changed, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, maybe who touched the ball, obviously, because it was different personnel, but you know, it just wasn't so disjointed. It's really nice to see.
Yeah. Let me go back to Jalen, because I think Jalen is probably the story that didn't get talked about a lot in terms of the fact that he's coming back from wrist surgery. What does that mean for his, you know, his handle? What does that mean for his shot? How is he, you know, going to be different coming into this?
We saw
Tatum, right? In the playoffs, obviously going to another level. We saw him go win a gold medal, but then Jalen. So, you know, it really didn't get discussed. There's a lot of talk about Ime and Brad and the guys coming in, but there was a real good chance that, you know, we'd see in Jaylen Brown, a guy that was going to be a step slow and behind. And as you said, didn't miss a beat. Really, not only didn't miss a beat, was hot as hell starting off. I mean, he had like 18, 20 out of the first 21 points or something like that. I mean, he was unbelievable. And that's what this team can do. And that's what he did last year. So to your point, not missing a beat, damn right. I mean, he was really looking strong. The other thing that was interesting, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. So Tatum bulks up, right? Brown kind of slims down. What does that do? I mean, it's certainly still Jaylen Brown is a strong player. I mean, he's not some sort of shrinking violet. He's not, you know, going to become, you know, Trae Young. But what does a slimmer Jaylen Brown do? What does that do for this team? What does it do for him? Was he too big and maybe now he's more legitimate swing them. Man? Like, what do you think?
It's what it does for them, right? Mm-hmm. So at the very beginning, I said, I'm ready for Tatum to be at the four, mm-hmm. But I still want Jaylen at the two. Well, him being lighter definitely helps him stay at that two position. I mean, he's always been strong and he could swing all the way to the four and everything else. But for him to really, you know, be as effective as he possibly can on D, to be like still as strong, but leaner. I mean, it's got to help with his lateral motion. I just think he's going to be better suited. So what it does is it puts him and Tatum farther away from each other, both in how they're used. Mm-hmm. And in their skill sets and where they're strong, right? So
like that.
They were kind of like a little too close. And then all we ever heard, right, the whole offseason was they have different skill sets and they complement each other. Well, the truth is they didn't complement each other that well, especially when they were going to be at the two and the three. And they were kind of performing similar functions in the offense. And not the same, but similar, right? And a lot of that ISO. Well, now Jalen goes to the two, Tatum bumps up to the four, Tatum's playing a little bit closer to the post and doing all of that, and then Jalen becomes this cutter, and he can defend what's probably, I mean, being similar, strong enough to still switch all the way up to the four, situationally depending, but even if he's just a little step quicker, the two, it's just going to make him so much more effective at guarding the other team's best player, which is going to happen. Like, he's going to get that assignment. So allowing him to be the guy who does some spot up threes so that he can be more effective on defense that way. And then occasionally be the cutter, you know, I think they're going to complement each other much better because now all of a sudden they're like completely different players in so many ways.
I like that. I like the way you put that, because I think that's really interesting, because you're right. That was the big thing we heard, was how close they were and they duplicate each other and all this. To see them kind of now moving away from each other, in terms of maybe the positional fit, perhaps. I think that's a really good idea. And it does, you know, if you're going to have, you know, if you're going to have, and it's probably more on the defensive end, I think. Yeah. I mean, certainly for Tatum, it does help in terms of posting up, but as you said, he's bigger, but retains the quickness, you know? I think with Jaylen, it's more about the defensive end and knowing that a lot of the guys he's going to guard are of the smaller variety. I mean, how much bigger do you need to be to guard, say, Chris Middleton? You know, you don't really. You probably need to be lighter and quicker to stay with him running around those screens. So I think that's, you know, maybe that was the judgment call. And I'd love to know kind of what his thinking was going into that. Because if that's, you know, if that was what it was, that's a pretty interesting scenario. Because you look at you look around at who he's potentially is guarding. He's big enough still to guard a Tobias Harris or,
well, let's go, you know, there.
A guy like that, but
that's a really important point, because the other thing that we've heard is that they're going to try to stagger those two so that they're not always together and they're different, but still not so different that Tatum can't still slide down to the three and Jaylen couldn't still slide up to the three. And then that gives them, and again, back to that rotations and how much smoother it was and how their depth is more balanced. I mean, talk about flexibility with that. You know, if Jaylen's on the bench and they want to have Rob for defensive purposes and then Horford out there, and then Tatum slides down to the three so that he can play more out on the perimeter, they can do that. Even if they sub, you know, Horford out and they've got Grant Williams. Well, then Grant plays the four and Tatum slides down to the three, but then they can go completely the other way. When Tatum heads to the bench, then they could go like a Peyton Pritchard and a Marcus Smart, you know, or, you know, any, I mean, they, or,
Schroeder.
Schroeder is where I was going. Thank you. Peyton, so, yeah. You know, it could be Peyton and Schroeder and then Jaylen slides up to the three. So I honestly think that the way we're going to see that staggering of those rotations is going to be, you know, that they're going to be at the three when the other one's off the court. They're going to be at the two and the four when they're both on. And I think they're each going to play the three when the other one is off, and they're going to kind of put the other pieces together into what makes sense. And Schroeder with Brown and like a Peyton Pritchard, still Smart would be fine, but you can see that really working. In my opinion, because Schroeder can do the attacking and Brown can be kind of the bailout.
Yeah, I see that. To close the thread on the power forward piece and kind of talking about what we were talking about behind the scenes here, in DMs.
when Byron, I really told you that I was finally okay with him going to the four. Yeah, we got to give our man some props for hitting us up today.
Yes. Thank you, Byron. Byron Sullivan, good man out there, Byron Solomon's Hood, at Byron Solomon's Hood, or at B Solomon's Hood, I guess. My mistake. let's close the loop with the four position, because, we talked, you know, through that conversation, we talked a little bit about, you know, where Grant Williams fits and Grant kind of doing the same thing as Jaylen, slimming down. And I think, while he didn't get a ton of playing time, and certainly not with the starters, because we talked about how deep the team is, the slim down Grant, and there's a lot of people who dislike the Grant Williams experience, and I understand from last year why that would be. But on the other side of things, and from the side that I look at, if he's an effective piece here in Boston, he just adds so much more versatility to this team, moving forward, that you really, I don't want to say you need to hit on him, but if he becomes a competent, reliable NBA player, the amount of flexibility that you have as a team, whether he plays five, he plays four, you know, he's switchable and able to do those things. That is probably, you know, I'm not saying that's the most important thing on the roster. Clearly there's a lot of things that could go right, but to hit on Grant Williams would be, I think it's more than just a nice thing. I think it adds a dimension to this team that we saw going back to the playoff win over the Raptors 2 years ago, or I guess technically a year ago, but 2 seasons ago, where his ability to switch and do that and play in a small ball five, it really does help. And, just talking about
so
about
much
him
about, and, yeah, yeah, so much about him reminded me of Big Baby Davis. And even, and I hope nobody takes this the wrong way. And I hope the players don't listen. And, you know, I'm making a point here rather than a character assassination. So I'm going to exaggerate it to make the point, but I always felt like there was some mental fragility with both of these players. You know, when they didn't fit, it really got in their heads, right? And so, you know, when Big Baby felt like he was on the outside or he wasn't like, you know, part of the crew and he wasn't in the rotation, like he kind of did seem to become a little bit of a head case. And I don't mean that part about Kevin Garnett making him cry. I just mean it was just like, he was struggling to find his way and he wore it all over his play, right? He wasn't hiding it from anybody who was watching the game. It was clear it was happening for him. And I felt like Grant Williams was kind of the same way. And I know it's just one preseason game, but like even the interview, I think it was, maybe it wasn't a pregame interview. Maybe I watched the interview that Amanda Flugrad and Mark,
D'Amico.
Yeah, D'Amico had with him.
Yep.
It's his confidence, dude. You know, he feels better. And then when he comes out and he takes his first shot from three, and it wasn't like it went in. It was like it went in perfectly, you know? And there's just that snap, that confidence. Like, dude, he's a different player in the mind because he committed to this. Mm. And I know, like, I just lost like 30 pounds and I know I'm more confident when I lose the weight, right? And whatever. And you feel better about yourself. And like everybody who's ever had to struggle with that out there knows what that's like. But I don't think that Grant Williams looked that way or has that confidence, you know, simply because the weight's gone and he thinks he looks better or feels better. It's because of the level of mental commitment that he decided, I'm going to commit myself to solving this problem. And I'm going to do everything in my control over the summer to position myself to have a great year and change the narrative on me. And that's where that confidence comes from, because he set his mind to a goal over the summer that was going to put him in a position to do that. And he accomplished it. Mm-hmm. And you can see it. And, you know, and I think it is going to help that he's not as clunky of a fit in the lineup because of the weight loss. But I honestly think that even if he hadn't lost the weight, that he would still have been more comfortable this year, because they would have found a way to put him into lineups that would have fit better. So I'm super optimistic that now that the lineups are better and it's just easier to fit him in, on top of that effort that he made and that mental commitment that he made over the summer, that this could be an incredibly successful year for him, because not only did he do what he was supposed to do, but yeah, the team did something to put him in a better position as well. And I think he's going to build off of that really, really strong.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that it did, there may have been that physical component of this where, you know, I think he was probably not as big, or he was too big for what he wanted to be and for the role he needed to play in last year as opposed to the prior season, his rookie year. But I also think it was a mental thing at some point where he was just, you could tell he was just not where he wanted to be. He wasn't feeling right out there. He looked in between.
We've all worked jobs.
Yeah.
Where you went into work and you're like, I don't fit here. I hate it here. And, you know, I think that's where he kind of, you know, probably got to. And he could have demanded a trade. He could have been whiny about it. He could have sulked over the summer. Yeah. Like, there's all kinds of unhealthy ways. And Lord knows the state of this country and the world right now and everything else. Like, there's just so much negativity and new noise we all have to deal with on a day in and day out basis. And he could have succumbed to all of that. Yeah. And instead, he did something incredibly productive in the way that he was going to deal with that. It's so encouraging. And, you know, even if it doesn't work out here in Boston, like, I really hope that he takes that just forward in life. He'll find a fit on a team, dude. He ain't going anywhere.
He's a smart guy. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's being young and figuring those things out is important. And, you know, I think he has figured some things out, like you said, here or wherever it may be. Juan Hernan Gomez got the start or Juancho. Depending upon what Juancho want. That was almost the podcast title a couple weeks ago when
you millennials.
So Juancho, 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 Juan.
What he's talking about.
I liked his fit in the starting lineup. I'm not a lover of the two big lineup, truthfully. Because I like spacing and I think that gives more room for Tatum and Brown. And I like the energy Juancho played with. What were your thoughts about his spot in that kind of starting group? Did you like it? Did you not like it?
No, I think it just showed that he's got a role out there, but he can't play the five. So when he's out there, he's going to play the four, but he's not going to play the four. This is going to be one of those scenarios where he's a guy who plugs in when Tatum slides down to the three and Brown is on the bench, right? So I think it just showed that he had a role, but they have so many different people that can fit different ways. Mm-hmm. But I mean, honestly, it was at the end of the game when, you know, they had Nesmith and they had Langford and they had a little bit more of what you're describing. Just not with the starters, but the similar kind of concept about the spacing that they really kind of just, you know, started draining threes. And, you know, Langford looked super confident out there as well. And the question mark with him is going to be health, right? Like, it's him and Rob Williams are in a bucket together. One of them got paid and one of them didn't. And, or I should say extended and paid, you know, and one of them didn't. But both of them have major question marks on whether or not that they can be consistent in the rotation. But at the same time, they both have minutes to give. It's going to be interesting to see who's sitting on the outside of all this. You know, Cantor obviously just has a situational role and, you know, they'll bring him in and plug him here and there, you know, but he's not going to get a lot of minutes this year, in my opinion, you know, and I think that's okay. I think it's okay for him. He's a great locker room guy. He'll take it, you know, head up. Won't be a problem for him. And they're going to need him. There's going to be times when they're going to need him to come in, but he's going to have a lesser role. I think Juancho is on the fringe. You know, I think there's some things that he does nicely, but he's on the fringe. There's so many of these wings that could steal the minutes if they stay, you know, and like Nesmith keeps bringing the energy and shooting confidently, then Juancho loses minutes, you know, Grant Williams takes that ride, Juancho loses minutes. You know, even Langford, right? If Romeo, you know, continues to perform the way he did with that level of confidence and keeps going after it, Juancho loses minutes because those players are all more effective coming off of the bench if they're spacing, they're ranging, and they're nailing threes. I liked the energy too, but I kind of feel like, you know, Cantor and Juancho are a little bit on the perimeter. But it has a lot to do with how those younger depth guys actually do play. If he can't rely on them, then Juancho will get minutes. I think he'll be consistent player for him.
Right. No, I think that's the key difference, right? From last year to this year is last year there was no Juancho. There was no Josh Richardson. No, you know, really no Al Horford. You know, it was a very very thin crew. This year you have vets who you can rely on if the young guys don't step up. And the challenge I see with the Juancho minutes or double big lineups with Horford and Rob playing is that when you get back into the rotation, that does take out one more spot for minutes from Langford or Nesmith or in some cases Pritchard too. So it steps in the middle of that. You know, in my ideal world, you have, you know, all of these various bench roles are filled by Romeo, Neesmith, Pritchard, and Grant Williams. And if that's the case, that's the best possible world for the Boston Celtics moving forward. Unlikely, sure, but it's the best foot forward. The best thing about this roster construction as opposed to last is that if those guys do falter, there's other people who can step up. I mean, in this case, we're starting Wancho. You know, there's a chance they start Horford. If these young guys step up, and geez, you know, just so happens we go Tatum, Neesmith, Brown at the 2 through 4. There's a lot of worse things in the world than that happening, because that's forced, you know, Ime's hand in that, you know, look, you can't keep these guys off the court. And that's the problem you want to have as a coach. And I think the problem the Celtics fans should be rooting for that Ime does have.
Yeah. All right. Hold on to that thought with Rob Williams, because I have some thoughts there. We're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back on for another football season. And as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Don't forget to use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your bonus. That's CLNS50. From football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, Rob Williams.
Yes.
Ooh, sealing this today.
Rob.
So here's the thing with Rob. He's got the paycheck. He wants the minutes. He struggled to stay on the court.
No, you're not doing this, are you?
There's this whole conversation. No, if you think I'm talking about trading, I'm not talking about trading.
No, but okay, go ahead. I'll stop talking.
So, but he had a rough start. Here's my concern. I feel like there's a little bit of a focus, whether it's coming from the team or in Rob's mind or not, it is a legitimate adjustment to make, right? He's kind of been one of those players that's like balls out, right? And we love that in Boston. We love that about him, and he's so talented. And it's really when he plays balls out that he has like this ginormous impact on the court. And I feel like it's also how he gets hurt. And so somebody, whether it's him, people, his handlers, his trainers, maybe it's the team, there's an opportunity here. One game is a very ridiculous sample size to say that this is what it is. But I am a little concerned that it's going to be in Rob's head to dial it back and try to figure out the tempo and the pace so that he can stay healthy and kind of manage, like you hear LeBron, all the greats talk about this, like how to turn it on and turn it off and still have an impact, but maintain your health, mm-hmm. but not give the fans what they deserve in the game, and like really striking that balance. And I'm a little concerned that not only would it result in an adjustment year in a way for him, but I'm also concerned that, you know, it might limit his effectiveness for a while. And we might, I think there's going to be some sellers on Rob Williams throughout this year, because I think that it makes sense that he figure out they've got Horford, they've got the insurance. He should not feel pressure to continue to balls out and then miss 30 games and not be able to play and not be ready for the postseason. It makes sense that this year they figure it out so that next year he's found that groove. He can be effective, but do that and still be confident and everything and build his confidence in that plan, because they don't need him to be the starter next year. Right. Probably going to need him to be the starter. And if they're going to have him be the starter, he's got to be able to learn how to play 30 minutes without going out for 30 games.
Yep.
Because they're always going to need somebody else. It's going to screw the lineup up. It's going to be a problem. And so I think there's going to be some sellers, and I'm watching for it. I'm not saying that this is what's going on in the background, but I'm going to keep a close eye on it, and I'm going to try to remind myself throughout the season that there's going to be moments where I'm like, where's that Rob Williams I love?
Yeah.
Where did he go? He's so awesome. And I got to be patient because I think that this has to be in the equation for this season for him. It just has to.
Well, it was a little bit of lightning in a bottle too. The whole Rob Williams experience has been a bit of, you know, can you believe this just happened? And the fact that it would be sustainable or is sustainable is, you know, I mean, I still think that's still up in the air. He has not been, he has been a consistently good performer when he has played, but his ability to consistently be a player who they can count on, that's been a little bit more of a challenge. And I think that's probably a good place for him to focus, frankly, now that he is going to make a sizable amount of money with this extension that kicks in next season. Not this season, but next season. But even with that, like, I hear what you're saying. I think there is pressure. You know, well, I've got the money and now I'm the starter and now I've got to run with it. Well, you know,
and maybe he's not really that effective when he's not high motor. You know, he's not, it's not like he's a great shooter. It's not like, right. You know, it's that Marcus Smart level of kinetic energy infusing onto the floor. I mean, remember all those uninspired games they had last year? Then all of a sudden, you know, when healthy, because we've seen some real duds from him, but that's because he's been fighting through injury. When legitimately healthy and going, you know, that crazy ball of energy. I mean, there were times where he completely pulled that team out of just offense, yeah. Nothing's moving, right. And just totally jazzed them up. So that's the turn it on, turn it off piece. He's got to figure out when to do that. But he also has to figure out how to be effective when he's not doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think I saw in the first game is I didn't see him high motor. I also didn't see him being all that effective without it.
I think Neesmith is also has this similarities there as well.
Just
right?
Not the injury piece.
He didn't have the injury piece, but in terms of coming out there and just being great, you know, just energy, energy, energy. It's great. But then, you know, to do what the Celtics need these guys to do on a consistent basis for 82 games plus playoffs, it's not that sustainable.
And it's the difference between role and rotation.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Right. And you can earn a role, but are you in the rotation? Are you a player who's getting, you know, 18, 20 minutes a night? Or in Rob's case, you know, 25, 30 minutes a night. Maybe even more.
Right.
I don't know that you can play with that energy level on a consistent basis. But having said that, you know, what are the, you know, I think the thing that I look at from Rob that his area of need is positioning. It's being smart. It's being prepared. It's particularly on the defensive end. That's where his focus needs to be. And I think I also, here's one thing I hate. We overreact to people miss shots. All the time, like as if like, well, he's got no value because he's 0-for-7. I mean, that's not true. Now, he made other mistakes out there. It's not as if that, you know, this was Rob Williams' best game ever and it just so happens he went 0-for-7. I mean, he struggled in other areas too, but I think it also becomes a bit overplayed too. He had some defensive miscues, which are common with him. But have become less common over the last year. You can chalk it up as a bad game. Now let's see what it looks like Saturday. You know, see what he looks like and see if things have.
But what about all the quick whip passing? You know, like he didn't have the ball moving like he used, like when he was that kinetic ball of energy, right? Like it was coming to him and he was almost like trying to figure out how to back to the basket instead of whipping the ball around. And that's where I think he's so effective is like he's almost – they got to know that he can backdoor him at any point and slam it. And then he's got to come along the baseline as if he's doing the backdoor And then he's got a curl, take the pass, and then keep the ball moving. Mm-hmm. So that threat draws the defense, and then it initiates the mismatch by him swinging it. Yeah. That wasn't happening. And you know, the ball movement is all we've heard about this team making a major as a team, right? We've heard about all the individual stuff, you know, and you know, yeah, we want Tatum to be a playmaker and, you know, Schroeder, like you said, I didn't know he could pass like, I mean, Richardson saying, right. I didn't know he could pass like that. But the team, what we all are expecting is up tempo, quick decision making and lots of passing.
Yeah.
And of anybody on this squad from last year that you would have said, you know, would have like generated that, it was Rob.
Yeah.
Over anybody.
For sure.
He was the guy who was doing that. So for him to come out in the first game, knowing that there's a big focus on it, and then that's like literally not what he showed us at all. I don't know if that's just, you know, Ime's, you know, game planning for right now, you know, if that was on purpose or if Rob wasn't just like comfortable with the sets yet, or I don't know what's going on with that for one game. But hopefully, you know, that's something that'll get sorted out. And cause I think he can do that without the high motor, right? He doesn't have to come crashing to the ground when he's whipping the ball around. He doesn't even have to jump when he's coming along the baseline and faking it. You know, if the oop isn't there, then, you know, no harm, no foul, but let's get him the ball. Let's get the ball moving. So I love what I heard about up tempo and passing. But I don't know that we totally saw that yet in game one. That's when I said I think this team's still got a lot of work to do. There was a couple of spurts of it, but they ran the break beautifully when they ran it. Mm-hmm. They got some good turnovers to initiate the break, but in large part, they were in half court a lot. And defensively, I think, you know, gambling a little bit more, I'd like to see so that they do get those easy buckets. But even offensively, you know, they were a little bit more inside and out, but that ball wasn't whipping yet. You know, if you remember that playoff run when it was Terry and all the young guys and, mm-hmm. you know, Hayward is injured and Kyrie is out, the ball movement during that run was phenomenal. And we need to see ball movement like that again.
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, they've been in camp a week, so I'm not losing hope yet.
No, it's over.
And I know that's not what you're saying.
You're in Boston, dude. Come on. We're in Boston. It's over.
But he's, you know, I think that there were attempts there. You always see attempts. You always see the first in the preseason, even the first couple of weeks of the season, you'll see attempts of trying to change the chemistry, okay, the makeup of the DNA of what the team wants. We're going to run faster. We're going to do this. Get back to me at the end of November. You know, are they doing it consistently? Are they not doing it consistently? And I think the defense probably was the bigger concern in terms of scheme wise. I think the defense, a bad Orlando team really kind of running roughshod. I mean, Cole Anthony was just lighting them up. Suggs lighting them up. Like, that's a bigger concern to me than even, you know, the offensive woes of, you know, and missing shots. I mean, that's the other thing. They're missing shots. To me, it looked like
that's points they towards were, not going with the double big lineup though, too.
Yeah. But I also think it's part of them trying to feel their way through it too. Like, what are we doing? What's our job? Okay. Oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. Like it just felt a little disjointed at times, which said to me like, okay, they're still in the process of trying to integrate these things that they're trying to start, you know? So the disjointedness of the defense,
Let me ask you, do you think this is in their nature or not? Because that's really what I was getting at, you know, how much do they have to fight to achieve that? Because there was a part of me, which is why I referenced that playoff run with the younger guys where I felt like it was in their nature. And then like they're coming out and there's a big emphasis on this and it's a preseason game and it doesn't matter. And I feel like they're almost struggling to find it, right? Like I'd rather see the turnovers, you know, that's what preseason's for. So commit to the ball movement because that's your nature and that's going to be the team identity. And if there's a ton of turnovers and it's sloppy, well, so be it. That's what it takes in the preseason is like you said, trying. But I didn't see the trying. I'd take the turnovers in a huge loss if they were getting through not, you know, telegraphing and not being as crisp as they need to be. But I didn't think we saw that. So that's a flag. It's not over, but that's a flag for me, knowing that there's, if that's the emphasis, then why didn't we see a consistent effort on it, even if it didn't look good?
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's see what happens Saturday.
I'm ready to, you know, take Saturday's game and take the third game and kind of say, okay, they've figured it out. They're starting to figure it out. I mean, this is new schemes. This is new coaching. I mean, this is the first time we've seen this since Doc was here. I mean, that feels like forever ago, right? And 2013, you know, that's the last time we went through such an overhaul of how this team operates. So.
And what was it before that? Did Doc come in 06? For the 06-07?
Five was his.
So we've had two coaches in almost.
04? Right? It was 04? Let's see. Yeah, I think it was 04. Cause
I have Marcus, to go back and look.
Yeah, cause the Banks draft, yes, it's 04. Because right.
Okay.
He started 04-05.
So 3 years before the trade. The year they brought Kevin Garnett, that was year three.
Right.
For Doc.
So 04, okay. 05, 05, 06, 06, 07. No, yeah, that was his fourth year. 07, 08 was his fourth year.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
seriously, like almost 20 years, we've only had two coaches.
Yeah. Right. That's insane. So, you know, you kind of look at that and say, okay, well, Jesus, don't wonder. This is going to take some time. The thing is, Orlando's also has a new coach. There's a lot of teams with new coaches right now. Mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily
an excuse.
Just, oh, well, you know, yeah. Of course. But I think.
Well, it's not the regular season. So let's go there then. And then we'll wrap on this. And I have one little nugget here from a listener, but, so if we like how, I kind of don't care about the seed so much as I care about growth over the course of the season, mm-hmm. because I feel like if they're finishing strong, it doesn't really matter where they land. You know, it's, you're just only going to go so far as the team ceiling anyway. You're going to have to beat all those teams you're going to meet in the postseason. Matchups help a little bit, might help you, you know, get through, you know, some rough patches, you know, if there's some clunkiness, you know, weariness getting started in the postseason and whatever. So how many games into this year? And I know traditionally they say about 20, you know, landing right around Christmas break and all that. But do you think that holds, or are you going to kind of look more out to the All-Star break and be like, okay, how does this team play heading into the All-Star break? Not after the rest coming out of it. Mm-hmm. Cause that's what I'm thinking. How do they finish going into the All-Star break? Because if this is like that mental grind, like I was just talking about, and it's not their nature and they're fighting to find it and the consistency. And then they just kind of like wilt exhaustedly into, you know, the All-Star break. I think that'll tell us a lot about where they're at and what they have got left for the finish. Whereas if they're kind of going in there and they're having some fun and yeah, they're kind of at the, you know, fringe at the bottom of the playoff picture, but they're kind of finding their way and they're getting energized and then they get a break and then they come back out. So for me, I'm actually going to wait until All-Star break before I decide where this team's at. I mean, I think it requires a different level of patience.
That's fair. No, I think that's really fair. And I would agree that more patience than usual would be a good idea. You know, I think that it's, I think we're going to know a lot more about what Ime is expecting and how guys are held accountable. Cause that seemed to be the one kind of through line through a lot of the.
Yeah. The players we wish kind of, Brad kicked our ass.
Yeah. Which was, I thought, kind of bizarre. And I thought,
weird.
Why wouldn't you tell him that? When you're in the process thereof, but, in any event,
why wouldn't you do it to each other so that he knew he had to step in?
Right.
You know, that's just good old fashioned scapegoating.
Yeah.
And if that's what they need to turn the, you know, turn the page on last season, I'm fine with it. But, but that's, you know, let's just call it what it is.
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think it takes a longer run, at least until Christmas, at the very least. But yeah, you're, I mean, yeah, I think you're right. I think you're into February to see how does this really shake out. And, you know, even if you get healthy, if you stay healthy, it's going to take, I think, some time to find the rotations and find the right players because there are so many guys who are, you know, in that, you know, those kind of 6 through 10, 12 spots where, you know, things are open. It's an open season for that second route, that second kind of second five going in, I guess.
All right. We're going to end on this. You may know I'm in a fantasy league.
Yes.
With some of our listeners. You've heard me talk about that before.
Yes.
And, I think I called it out a few weeks ago. Hey, are we doing this thing? So, Russell runs the league. We are doing this thing. Cha-ching. And, we have some communication going on in the chat for the league and whatever, but he tagged this on and I thought you'd appreciate it. He says, by the way, you should have your son back on sometime. It was very cool to see the multi-generation love of the Celtics. Makes me realize as a listener how long I have enjoyed you guys. You were the second podcast I ever downloaded from iTunes, and it's certainly the show that I have listened to the longest. If you ever want to put the amount of years we've been doing this, John, into perspective, like literally the second podcast somebody ever listened to, still listening after I don't even know how many years it's been now. I mean, we're coming up on
16, 17, yeah,
somewhere in there. And yeah, like that's, we've been around since the very beginning of podcasting and, that's some serious tenure, dude. So thanks, Russell. It's just, we've gotten a lot of these lately. I don't know why. Maybe I've just been getting sentimental on the show here and there, and the people that the 50 people that are still with us. I know it's not 50, but
no,
it's our same core. I think it's still like we got this core group that has really been around since the first 2 or 3 years and just continues to stay with us
through thick and thin.
There's been some thin, dude. There's definitely been,
and then some thick too.
And we're not nearly as consistent as we were when we started this thing, you know, for obvious reasons, but, you know, life and kids and commitments and all of that, new jobs, many times, but, you know, Russell, I just appreciate you saying that. And, you know, I got to shout out Bill who said, hey, are we doing this thing? And, you know, we brought it up on the show and we are, and it's a great, great little fun group of listeners there hanging out in the fantasy league. And, my son's joining the fantasy league this year, John.
There you go. So, wow. Big time. Way to go, Riley. So, good man.
We'll bring him back on for sure as the season gets going. He's in his first year at college and he's in communications and sports management and,
Apple falling far from anyway.
Who would have thought that would have happened? So yeah, we'll bring him back on, at some point here in the next few weeks. Maybe we'll do like a end of the preseason wrap prediction. And, you know, right when I start to get negative, we can bring him in to counter me.
I love it. That sounds great. I need help.
You do sometimes. That's for sure.
It's true. It's true.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. A heartfelt thank you to everybody for tuning in. I'll leave it at that. Great show. Great to see some Celtics basketball. And on behalf of my co-host, John Duke, the founder of CLNS Media, Nick Gelso, I'm Justin Poulin. Thanks for listening to this episode of Celtics Stuff Live.